welcome to Bolivia Weekly, our weekly podcast featuring all the most important news stories from Bolivia. Please see our website at www.boliviaweekly.com for these stories in writing. I'm your host, David Holman, and if you enjoy listening to this podcast, please recommend it to your friends and don't hesitate to comment on all your favorite social networking sites. Headlines for this week. Devastating floods hit the Bolivian lowlands, coupled with a landslide in urban La Paz. A head-on bus collision has left 12 dead and 91 injured. A Bolivian director wins two awards at the Sundance Film Festival. Police bust a cocaine mega lab. And Bolivia doubles its lithium reserves estimate. Those and other stories to come, but first, thanks to our sponsor, the Spitting Llama Bookstore and Outfitter. Learn more at www.thespittinglama.com. Now, for the news from Bolivia for the week ending Sunday, January 31st, 2010. An Israeli tourist, Amrit Arusi, age 24, was stabbed to death in La Paz while trying to defend his girlfriend from some kind of attempted robbery or assault. An investigation has been launched, but is complicated because Bolivia cut all ties with Israel during Israel's invasion of Gaza last year. No further information was available on the incident. Bolivian President Evo Morales accused the U.S. of harboring wanted criminals and refusing to extradite known offenders at a press conference on Monday the 25th. He said, quote, "I greatly lament that the United States is a trash can of the delinquents of Latin America," end quote. Morales extorted Barack Obama to expel and extradite those Latin Americans wanted for crimes in their home countries. Several of Evo's political opponents and men accused of corruption have fled to the U.S. in recent months, such as the runner-up in the December 6th presidential election, Manfred Reyes Villa. Ex-Bolivian president and U.S. ally Gonzalo Sanchez de Lozada has been accused of the murder of 60 people and lives peacefully in the U.S. along with terrorism suspect Branko Marinkovic. Recently, the ex-governor of the La Paz state, José Luis Paredes, fled the country as he was being investigated for corruption and theft, and his whereabouts remain unknown. After President Morales made remarks on Monday to the effect that his government is considering a new law regarding the ability of the press to, quote, lie, most national newspapers decried a perceived move towards censorship. President Morales' press secretary, Ivan Canelas, who was himself a journalist, clarified that the government is not seeking to censor the press, but rather to establish norms and rules so that the press, quote, doesn't lie. Canelas said, quote, "We have decided to fight against lies and information manipulation by the press because it's clear that this not only hurts journalism, but all of society. We believe that we have to work on a new law based on Articles 106 and 107 of the Constitution," end quote. These articles of the new Constitution guarantee freedom of expression without any censorship in Bolivia, but also state that the press respect, quote, "truth and responsibility," and that these attributes be, quote, "exercised under the ethical norms and self-regulation of the journalism organizations and press by their own law," end quote. Canelas concluded that any new laws would be made, quote, "in consensus primarily with journalists and with professional organizations and unions, obviously without throwing out the presence of businessmen." Canelas denied the press's speculations about a so-called gag law and affirmed the right of free speech, but left it unclear as to what exactly the government plans to do to ensure that the press tells the truth or who decides what indeed is true. The Bolivian press consists of over 20 different urban newspapers, many radio stations, TV channels, and has a relatively high degree of freedom of speech. President Morales has lashed out at journalists from time to time, once calling the entire profession his enemies, but has not personally taken very many substantive steps to limit the freedom of the press up to this point, which is why the president's talk of a new journalism law drew criticism from most of the nation's media outlets. As numerous rivers overflow their banks, 9 people have drowned and over 22,000 are homeless as Bolivia's rainy season intensifies in recent weeks. 2 deaths occurred in tropical Cochabamba, 3 in Potosí, 3 in southeast Chuquisaca, where two people remain missing. The Central Emergency Command, or OCE, of the Santa Cruz region reported that a 38-year-old man in Santa Cruz was swept away and killed by floodwaters this Sunday the 24th, along with a 14-year-old youth. Vice Minister of Civil Defense Hernan Tuco explained that these deaths are all due to flooding and that the government has budgeted $6.6 million for these rainy season problems and that over 50% of this money has already been dispersed to purchase medicine, tents, food, and tools. Furthermore, Tuco explained that Bolivia has applied for a $75 million loan from the Andean Development Corporation for help with disaster relief. On January 26, the governor of Santa Cruz, Rolly Aguilera, told the press that he hoped that the new governing cabinet would be less, quote, confrontational than the last, and focused more on economic, social, and development policy to the benefit of all Bolivians. He said that he looks for, quote, bridges with the government, and asked the new prime minister, Sacha Llorente, to change the negative attitude his predecessor held. Despite these hopeful words towards collaborating with the Morales government, Aguilera also cautioned, quote, we will continue firmly with our autonomy enshrined by the new constitution. The month of January proved a bloody one on Bolivia's roads, with several major bus crashes and numerous smaller crashes that left over 80 people dead and several hundreds wounded, many critically. Bolivia's Cardinal, Julio Terrazas, has called on all drivers to exercise more caution and to stop drinking alcohol, which led to several of this month's crashes. On January 6, the bus company Bolivia combined bad driving with mechanical failure that led to 22 deaths. On the 19th, a Flota Pullman bus company from Chile smashed head-on into a logging truck whose engine had failed in the middle of the road, leaving 15 dead. On the 21st, a Transasunta bus near Asunta rolled off a steep embankment into a fast-flowing river, killing 10 and leaving 8 missing. On the 25th, a bus from the company Cosmos rolled over on the Santa Cruz-Cochabamba route, killing 5 because the driver was drunk 4 times over the legal limit and had no driver's license. Finally, 2 buses, one from the Copacabana line and another from the Potosí Buses Company, crashed head-on at night on January 30th, leaving 12 dead and 91 injured. Other people were killed in smaller accidents, and even the former president of Bolivia, Jaime Paz Zamora, was confirmed to have been hospitalized for injuries sustained in a car crash, and he is now being charged with homicide for the passenger of the other vehicle that he killed. Mr. Paz Zamora's blood tested positive for low levels of alcohol, but were within the legal limit. Bus companies such as Bolivar and Sindicato Transcopacabana have relatively good safety records, whereas companies such as El Dorado and Cosmos and a variety of small, lesser-known companies are involved in frequent and fatal crashes. February marks the beginning of Carnival, sparking off weeks of drunken revelry during the rainy season, so the road situation may not improve very soon. A bus loaded with 50 people that left from Santa Cruz broke almost every law regarding transportation safety, and the trip ended in a horrific accident that left 5 dead and 43 injured. The driver, 24-year-old Luis Munoz Diaz, did not have a license to drive a bus and was seen drinking beer during a rest stop. He had converted the driver's cabin into a bar where he and his friends drank rum and coke and other alcohol from flasks. Munoz was not scheduled to drive the bus, and the bus itself was switched at the last minute for unknown reasons. Lab exams performed several hours after the crash confirmed that Munoz had a blood alcohol content of 1.95, or 0.195%, almost 4 times the legal limit, a point at which speech is slurred and motor function severely impaired. His brother, Edson Munoz Diaz, 22, who accompanied Luis in the driver's cabin, was even more drunk, with a blood alcohol content of 2.34. In Bolivia, 0.05 is the legal limit of alcohol consumption to operate a motor vehicle, and 0.1 is considered intoxicated, where the subject would have poor motor skills, bad balance, and blurry vision. Munoz was almost double this, at 0.2, where memory blackout, stupor, and loss of consciousness are common symptoms. Police have confirmed that there is no doubt that Munoz was driving the bus at the time of the accident due to the fact that he had to be hydraulically removed from the driver's seat where his hand was stuck by twisted metal, and they have amputated three of his fingers. The owners and administrators of the Cosmos company could not be located at this time, nor can anyone explain why the bus flagrantly violated so many laws and norms. The only word from the company comes from a lower-level employee who has offered to return any luggage to passengers that they may be missing due to the fatal crash. The route from Santa Cruz to Cochabamba is 500 kilometers long, and law requires that a driver can only go 300 kilometers without being relieved, so co-pilots are always used on this route. However, the bus had no co-pilot, and Munoz himself would not have qualified as a co-pilot. As an update to this story, the government issued an executive order suspending the operating license of the Cosmos Bus Company shortly after the incident, to which all bus transport companies in the country delivered an ultimatum to the government to annul the suspension. The owner of Cosmos, René Cruz, admitted that Munoz had been driving them in this state for 7 months prior, quote, in similar conditions without any mishap, end quote, and vowed to pursue legal action to annul Cosmos's suspension. The bus companies, along with the Bolivian Drivers Confederation and the Interdepartmental Omnibus Union, argued that the Minister of Government, Sacha Llorente, had no legal right to suspend Cosmos on January 27th and are threatening a nationwide blockade. The government has pressed charges against the owners of Cosmos for allowing a bus to be driven by an unlicensed drunk, and Bolivia's bus companies and drivers' unions are threatening to radicalize their protest measures. The director of the Bolivian Drivers Confederation, Franklin Duran, accused the government at a press conference of leaving 500 drivers and 500 ticket takers without work because of the suspension of one of Bolivia's largest bus companies. Duran said to the press, quote, the factors leading up to the crash are many. The driver is responsible. But the traffic police also had a role. They should have performed their controls. The government talks about a B license, but there is no entity that produces nor controls such a thing. End quote. Munoz, for his part, has apologized to the families of those he killed and asked for forgiveness. Munoz has been released from the hospital and has been ordered to stay put before his trial, where he can be sentenced to serve up to 5 years in prison, but will most likely only serve 2 if he is well behaved, despite having caused a bus accident while drunk and without a license that killed 5 and injured dozens. On January 27th, Bolivia's Director of Natural Evaporative Resources, Saul Villegas, announced that he believes that Bolivia's actual lithium reserves are 2 times larger than previously thought, according to the government-controlled media outlet ABI. A United States Geological Survey had estimated Bolivia's reserves, located in the delicate southeast region of the Uyuni Salt Flats, at around 9 million tons, representing more than 50% of the world's reserves. And if Villegas's estimates are correct, then Bolivia would have a far larger share than 50%. Villegas said to the press, quote, after the first studies and exploration work we did in 2009, we can assure everyone that Bolivia has the world's largest lithium reserves, and we easily doubled the figure given by earlier studies. We're talking about 50% of the worldwide reserves. Villegas went on to say, within this integrated project, our goal is to produce lithium carbonate, but in the interim, we have to extract another rich resource. We have to take advantage of it. Within the process of evaporation of salts that crystallize, there are salts that contain potassium, and that's why it's easier to rapidly produce potassium than lithium. Villegas explained that negotiations are underway with Bolivia's state oil company, YPFB, to construct a gas pipeline to supply future processing plants that will be built in Uyuni. Quote, there will be 4 plants that will need 170 cubic meters of gas per day, 1 central plant, and another treatment plant where they will obtain lithium carbonate, boric acid, chloride, and potassium sulfate. There will be another chloride sodium plant and another of sodium carbonate, and a third lime processing plant, and another of borax decahydrate. End quote. Bolivia is currently constructing a $6 million lithium refining plant, but plans are afoot to build the various plants that Villegas mentioned. The construction of these plants is in the planning stages, and an investment of $400 million is projected to be completed by 2014 by the government. Bolivia's president, Evo Morales, envisions refining the lithium on-site and building a battery production plant, and perhaps even an electric vehicle manufacturing and assembly plant in the far distant future. Uyuni's lithium cannot be processed with existing technology in Bolivia, because although the salty brine is extremely rich in lithium, it also contains other chemicals that make extraction extremely difficult. Even once Bolivian engineers can extract and process the lithium, transportation of the mineral will also be a logistical challenge from this remote mountainous region at 12,000 feet above sea level. The Uyuni Salt Flats are the largest in the world and are Bolivia's number one tourist attraction, with over 100,000 visitors per year, and no studies have been published on the impacts of this massive proposed manufacturing and mining operation on the tourism industry or on Uyuni's fragile ecosystem, which is supposedly protected by the Eduardo Averoa National Park. Lithium is a key component of lithium-ion batteries, now in high demand to power everything from iPhones to the Toyota Prius. On January 27th, the Bolivian equivalent of the DEA, called the Felsen, captured a large and technologically sophisticated cocaine laboratory in the community of Clara San Pedro, just 10 kilometers from the city of Santa Cruz. According to Santa Cruz's El Deber newspaper, this mega lab consisted of several rustic dwellings that housed massive amounts of chemicals used to process pasta básica, or cocaine paste, into cocaine. Police confiscated 1,800 liters of acetone, 600 liters of sulfuric ether, five 500-gallon tanks, hydraulic presses, digital scales, pumps, water heaters, and other various and complicated tools, along with cocaine precursors, in addition to 6 kilos of refined cocaine found in bricks. Felsen chief Jorge Romero estimated that the lab could produce 50 kilos of refined cocaine per day and was using advanced Colombian technology. Two men on the premises were arrested in this raid. 4 days earlier, the Felsen had found a factory with 35 kilos on hand at a site 80 kilometers away on the road to Camiri, and had arrested the landowner, along with five other people present who claimed to have not been aware of the massive cocaine production that was going on. Last Tuesday, police seized 6 kilos of cocaine from a package in the bus terminal that was disguised in cans of dehydrated milk. The Felsen are ramping up efforts to curb what is seen as rising cocaine production in Bolivia. At 4:30 a.m. on January 28th, 72 houses were swept away in a landslide in the Huano-Huanuni area of southern La Paz. Amazingly, nobody was killed or is missing. President Morales traveled to the disaster area on January 29th. And asked the survivors to form a committee so the government can give them new land and new homes with an investment of several million dollars. The Bolivian army occupied the zone and set up tents for the homeless families. Morales said to the press, quote, "I understand that this disgrace isn't the first time, and it appears that our primary opponents are floods and natural disasters." President Morales made it clear that he believes that Milton Gomez, who he appointed as Minister of Mining and Metallurgy just 1 week ago, should step down as he faces criminal charges. Gomez did just that on January 29th, and a former mining union leader, José Pimentel, was appointed in his place. Evo said of Gomez, quote, "I had a lot of respect for Milton Gomez. I'm sure he didn't steal anything, but these are administrative responsibilities. When these processes are in motion, it's obligatory and everyone would have to defend themselves. But sooner or later, I'm sure that Milton will demonstrate his innocence." End quote. Pimentel, the new Minister of Mining and Metallurgy, comes from Potosí, a Bolivian mining stronghold. Most recently, from 2006 to 2009, he was a representative with President Morales' Movement to Socialism Party. Pimentel had worked for 10 years in Comibol, the state-owned mining company, before becoming the leader of the Federation of Bolivian Mine Workers for 8 years. Samuel Doria Medina, the right-wing millionaire who came in third in the December presidential election, has accused Pimentel of playing a role in a 1995 kidnapping ransom that was orchestrated by the Tupac Amaru Revolutionary Movement of Peru. Whether these charges are true or not very much remains to be seen. In Tarija, on January 29th, Bolivian President Evo Morales criticized NGOs, saying that, quote, "some are the fifth round of capitalist espionage," end quote. President Morales proclaimed that only unions speak for civil society, and that NGOs and foundations are a European model and are weaker than unions. Morales said, quote, "some NGOs and foundations come here with the pretext of helping the poor, but really as a fifth round of capitalist espionage and empire. I have personally witnessed this as a union leader, and have seen some foundations and some NGOs are really just instruments of capitalism and imperialism. End quote. According to Morales, there are countries that have created mechanisms to investigate developing nations through programs of studies financed by foreign states. Morales said, quote, "I believe that this research has an ulterior motive. Their goals obey certain monopolies," end quote. Morales had decried in 2009 that NGOs had become a big business that fed off the poor, indigenous people, and the environment, as a rebuttal to criticism from environmental NGOs that the government's oil and gas extraction plans from the fragile Amazonian region of the northern La Paz state were not sound. 12 people were killed and a further 91 injured on January 30th when two buses crashed head-on at night while one tried to pass a slower vehicle on the narrow road between Yacuiba and Santa Cruz near Camiri. The crash occurred at night on a bus from the Potosí Buses Company and one from the Copacabana Company, where apparently the Potosí Buses vehicle attempted to pass without seeing the oncoming Copacabana bus, smashing head-on at high speed. Two bodies are still stuck in the twisted metal of the bus as rescuers work to free them. The injured have been transported to hospitals in Camiri, and police are opening an investigation into the incident. Bolivia's new mining minister, Pimentel, assured private companies that their capital is safe in Bolivia under the new constitution, and also spoke about promoting the creation of value-added products rather than just exporting raw ore. His predecessor, Milton Gomez, who only held office for 1 week, stepped down over allegations of corruption from when he worked at the National Health Agency. Pimentel said that 2010 will see $200 million put towards funding mining projects in Bolivia, and the industrialization of these minerals will be prioritized. Pimentel highlighted that industrialization projects will focus on iron and lithium. Police responded to emergency calls at 5:30 a.m. in the Calvario de Quillacollo neighborhood on the outskirts of Cochabamba this Sunday, January 31st, and found a mob of 40 to 50 people beating a young man tied to a post. Police rescued the young man, Migio Negrete Gallego, 18 years old, from the mob, but he died of his wounds shortly thereafter. Circumstantial reports indicates that neighbors had encountered the man attempting a robbery and beat him to death without recourse to a judge or trial. In Bolivia, this kind of mob justice and lynchings are not uncommon, and Quillacollo has a high murder rate relative to the country at large. No arrests have been reported. In a separate incident the same night, police found two dead men in Vinto, another outskirt of Cochabamba, who had been tied up and stabbed repeatedly. The two men were identified as Marcial Mejia Valeriano, 25 years old, and René Mejia Valeriano, 29 years old, and were drinking at a bar before their death. No further information was available on any motives or suspects. Bolivian director Juan Carlos Valdivia won two awards at the Sundance Film Festival for his picture Zona Sur yesterday in Park City, Utah. Zona Sur is a commentary on the upper class of La Paz and the effects of political changes that they are feeling. Zona Sur won Best International Drama and Best International Script. The International Monetary Fund has predicted a 4% rise in Bolivia's GDP for 2010, largely thanks to government investments and increased exports, according to a January 21st study. The IMF projected that Bolivia will surpass its 2009 GDP growth of 3.3% and reach 4% in 2010. The Bolivian government has estimated 2010 growth at between 4.5% and 5.5% for 2010. The IMF predicted that Bolivia's international currency reserves will grow to $9.257 million, some $690 million more than its total at the end of 2009. The IMF's directors applauded Bolivia for its impressive macroeconomic performance during the 2009 crisis, one of the best results in Latin America. The IMF did cite a need to improve public-private sector relations and to increase investor confidence in Bolivia, along with better judicial and institutional organization. The IMF report concluded that Bolivia's fiscal policy should keep their ratio of debt very low in 2010. The Minister of Finance and Economy said to the press, quote, "Once again, an international organization like the IMF has announced good economic policy in 2009, strengthening the fiscal, external, and internal consumption and banking sectors, and it augurs favorably for 2010. Now we turn to reporter Michaela Hagen for stories on technology in Bolivian classrooms, youth participation in Carnaval, bullying at Bolivian schools, and a profile of the nonprofit group ProInpa, dedicated to crop diversity and food security.
More than 2 million Bolivian youths head back to classes this Monday in all nine of Bolivia's states. The students begin classes amid talk of the educational technology revolution, a national push to provide computers to students and teachers with the goal of strengthening the quality of education and improving students' technological literacy. The Bolivian Minister of Education, Roberto Aguilar, explained that the technological revolution has three phases. The first phase focuses on getting computers into the schools. These computers will include virtual libraries and educational software. The second phase, the provision of computers for teachers, will begin before next February and will include assigning nearly 130,000 machines to staff across the nation. The final phase includes the connection of Bolivia's nearly 5,000 school districts to the internet. This wiring of Bolivian classrooms will be achieved through an agreement with the national telecommunications company, Entel. Quote, "This agreement with Entel allows us to have an educational channel that will be managed by the Ministry of Education to produce educational programs that will be very beneficial for distance education and will provide us satellite connection with schools." Aguilar also explained that the educational technology revolution is a policy that will permit students immediate access to information and will support the potential of teachers and students to improve the quality of education. Quote, "We think that continuing to educate and build capacity regarding the use of technology over the course of the next 2 years will allow us to improve the educational quality in a way that has never occurred before." In Cochabamba, more than 40 dance groups opened the Bicentennial Carnival, oozing with talent, youth, and creativity in yesterday's pre-carnival. The youth retraced the traditional route, practicing their choreography. The walkthrough snaked through the downtown thoroughfares of Cochabamba. The pre-carnival was also a test for the carnival's security forces, who yesterday began to regulate the consumption of alcohol and confiscate balloons in order to prevent violence during the festivities. According to a recent study by the NGO Association of Vital Voices, 4 out of every 10 Bolivian students are victims of such schoolyard harassment as threats, taunts, coercion, social exclusion, and educational marginalization. The study also showed that 50% of students were involved in scholastic harassment, either as victims, aggressors, or spectators. 3 of 10 students were identified as aggressors. The study was overseen by the international organization Project Plan Bolivia. Karen Flores Palacios, executive director of Plan Bolivia and the author of The Right to a Violence-Free Education, explained that this type of harassment was dangerous to victims, aggressors, and bystanders alike. She said, "It removes the victim's sense of confidence and safety, diminishes the aggressor's capacity to empathize and achieve compromise through negotiation, and it encourages bystanders to ignore injustice and cruelty." Flores Palacios counseled parents to observe signs of harassment by paying close attention to their students' attitudes towards school, habits, and physical appearance. If parents suspect harassment, it is important for them to communicate with the school and maintain a warm, supportive relationship with their students. And now for our weekly profile of a Bolivian NGO. Today we will be profiling ProIMPA. In an age where seeds are patented, crops are genetically engineered to be dependent on fertilizers, and agricultural dumping threatens the livelihood of small-scale and traditional farmers around the world, Fundación ProIMPA is an organization dedicated to research and technological innovation that supports, protects, and develops the biological and cultural riches of the farming tradition in Bolivia, and promotes the sovereignty and food security of the Bolivian people. To achieve their objectives, ProIMPA has developed three main objectives. 1, the conservation and use of genetic resources. 2, the development of technologies for competitiveness and food security. And finally, the promotion and dissemination of those technologies. Conservation and the use of genetic resources is vital in Bolivia, one of only 17 megadiverse countries in the world. For ProIMPA, the conservation includes cataloging grains, roots, and tubers, and encouraging the continued production of those unique crops. Developing technologies for competitiveness and food security includes the introduction of inputs such as fertilizers, pesticides, and modern machinery. In addition, ProIMPA looks to create the most efficient marketing and distribution strategy for each agricultural producer. Finally, the promotion and dissemination of technologies includes the establishment of farmer field schools and local agricultural research committees that both train and respond to local farmers as they modify their farming practices. ProIMPA partners with dozens of governmental and non-governmental organizations worldwide, including the Bolivian government, various universities around the globe, and USAID and the Peace Corps.
That's all for the news this week. I'm your host, David Holman, and thanks for joining us. To learn more about these stories and comment, please see our website at www.boliviaweekly.com. Thanks to our sponsors, the Spitting Llama Bookstore and Outfitter, promoting ecotourism and multicultural learning at locations in Copacabana, La Paz, and Cochabamba. For more information, please see www.thespittingllama.com. That's all for this week's show, and I hope you'll tune in next week.